Hello and welcome to Vintage Lesbians, a personal journey of friendship and queer history, where we try to set the record a little less straight. I'm one of your hosts, and my name is Shan.
I'm your other host, and my name is Allison.
That felt weird in my mouth to say. I don't know why I said it like that.
And this is Vintage Lesbians.
This is Vintage Lesbians.
Say, Shan, what vintage lesbian are we going to talk about today?
None of them.
What?
I wanted today to have more of a conversation, rather than like a super research-driven episode, about a phenomenon known as rainbow capitalism.
Yes, rainbow capitalism.
Are you familiar?
Well, based on the words rainbow capitalism, I'm guessing rainbow stands for, you know, gay. Capitalism probably stands for...
the bad one.
Capitalism. Oh, yes. Spoiler alert, this isn't going to be a pro-capitalism podcast. It's probably not going to necessarily surprise any of our listeners.
Yeah, I don't know how long you need to listen to us to figure out that we are liberal cucks. Anyway, rainbow capitalism, the commodification of gay culture, gay symbolism. Rainbow capitalism has also been known as pink capitalism, gay capitalism, or homo capitalism. It has an interesting history. I have like differing opinions on it, because in one mind, I feel like it's good that companies feel like they need to appear LGBTQ friendly to stay relevant.
Right.
But I don't like that they're making money off of our identities, I guess.
Yeah. No, I get that. I do like how, once again, not pro-capitalism, but I do like how it sort of almost reflects society's opinions and, like, views of the gays, even though society still definitely hates queer people. We've gotten to a point where, like, we aren't going to be murdered for holding hands in public and stuff. Well,
you and I aren't.
Yeah, fair. But okay.
A black trans woman would be. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, things are bad.
This is where I struggle, because these companies could be doing a lot for, like, black trans women and normalizing it and actually making places that are safe for marginalized queer people to be. But they're just throwing money at a big party every year and putting out a couple rainbowy, look, we have two dads commercials, and spending the rest of the year donating to politicians who are trying to legislate against us being able to get married or hold jobs.
Right.
So.
Definitely seems to be some hypocrisy there, a little bit of falseness. When you first mentioned doing an episode on rainbow capitalism, my mind went to the first time Target had Pride paraphernalia.
Oh yeah, that was nice.
And I was so stoked when that happened. Like, because finally I could go to like a mainstream store and get like Pride stuff. And
don't have to like tie-dye Pride into a shirt or
something. Or buy it online or anything. I don't love online shopping.
I don't love it either. It's
I like it's, to feel it's a gamble. And touch things. I have 7 shot glasses that range in color from red to purple that I got for $5 during a Pride sale at Target.
Allison, that sounds like it's a rainbow.
It's a rainbow.
And you bought it at Target.
I did. For $5 during Pride Month. And that's my month. That's the month when I get to buy myself fun things like rainbow colored shot glasses.
Which is cool. Like, don't get me wrong. I love being catered to. Should we get a little bit into the history of it, since we're a history podcast?
Yeah.
So, like, we've sort of talked about parts of rainbow capitalism before, right? Because we've talked about bars that catered to gay people. We've talked about magazines that were specifically made for gay people. That's rainbow capitalism.
Yeah.
It's commodifying gay culture. But that was very underground, and that was gay people making things for other gays in secret, because, you know, they're still publicly persecuted, illegal in a lot of places.
Like, if you go back to our Lisa Ben episode, Edith Eyde, she made magazines for people, and then she found that she couldn't mail them to people. Because that would be obscene.
A federal crime.
Yeah. But it was still important that she did that and, like, showed more people that it was nice to have her own voice out there.
The businesses and whatnot kind of grew in correspondence with the beginnings of, like, the movements for LGBTQ rights, but it sort of fell apart between the First and Second World War because of the Depression, the Great One, where no one had anything, and also there was fascism in Europe. And then after the Second World War, Western culture was pretty influenced by fascism, which contains within it massive amounts of homophobia.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of phobias.
Yeah. Any human-based phobia you could think of is probably there.
Yeah. Yeah. So there were, like, marginal homophile associations that were created, like the Mattachine and Daughters of Bilitis, that were trying to create like a positive view of homosexuality with their publications and meetings and sticking to the status quo.
It was a little less like chintzy keychains that will break in a couple of weeks.
No, it was more like, here's a magazine we made, and look, we're doing a charity party, and
if you read this, you'll see that we're real people.
We're real people, and we look and act just like you, and just really trying to remove the association of homosexuality being perverted and promiscuous and, you know, gross.
Yeah. Imagine one of your friends, only instead of a husband, they have a wife, but nothing changes.
Whoa.
That would be them, for example. Probably. I don't know. I wasn't there. So I know that there was an initial, like, peak, an initial climb of
There was definitely an initial climb after Stonewall when things started to go, get slightly better, and the gay liberation movement that we are still sort of in began, and that increased public visibility of homosexuality, and they were working to decriminalize homosexuality. Unfortunately, the HIV/AIDS pandemic just really put the gay community in a bad light and made them scary again.
Just spreading disease everywhere we go.
Yeah, yeah. And then that sort of fell in the 90s, and discrimination kind of diminished. Queer people were able to, like, get hired to jobs that, you know, at all.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
More gay people working, more gay people had money, so they were especially buying more things.
Cisgendered white gay people.
Yeah. Cis gay men, we'll say. White cis gay men.
Although I'm also thinking of power lesbians.
Power lesbians too, but, like, less so, because they're there's that super great wage disparity. This increase in purchasing power for the LGBT community was known as pink money.
Oh,
because they have, like, the same, like, a gay couple is going to have the same purchasing power as a straight couple with no children who are able to buy more things. So, you know.
Ah, the dual income, no
yeah,
kids.
Yeah, dual income, no kids.
Especially since they weren't allowed to have
kids. Yeah, they weren't allowed to have
kids. You know, like, so that's just some more money, baby.
Anyway, so this grew. This led to the rise of, like, gay neighborhoods that attracted marginalized people because they were kind of more affordable because, you know, a bunch of gays lived there. And there was social security because a bunch of other gays lived there. These neighborhoods, after the social stigma decreased, became very, very trendy and then became gentrified. Rent went up and the LGBTQ people went out because they couldn't afford it anymore.
Except for the very wealthy white ones.
That led to some increased specialization around the queer communities, and led to markets that specifically served the needs of queer communities by selling services and products exclusively designed for them. And then also led to companies beginning to include defense of LGBT rights in their company policies, like actually having it written down in rules, and also like financing LGBT events and doing some charity work. That kind of led straight into the like gay male ideal, if you will, because a lot of these companies, like statistically, if they're hiring gay people, it's going to be a white cis man.
Mm-hmm.
So you're giving white cis men money. White cis men are spending money. They're spending money on things that appeal to white cis men.
Right.
So you're going to see a lot of things that appeal to white cis men.
They have the most purchasing power, so they're going to be the ones catered to.
Exactly. And that leads to this idea that, like, a gay person is a rich white guy.
Mm-hmm. Who's probably just able-bodied.
Yeah, and a rich, able-bodied super white hot dude. And it's frustrating because it all of this leads to further marginalization of trans people of color, of disabled people. And a lot of those companies that wrote those policies in and those protections in, those companies that tout themselves as allies, like AT&T, for example, which says they're a longtime supporter of the LGBT community. Their chief diversity officer said, "As an ally, our support is longstanding and unwavering." AT&T donated almost $3 million to various anti-gay politicians between 2017 and 2018. So they're
a little bit of a discrepancy.
It's just a slight discrepancy, and that's just one example. There are hundreds, because there are hundreds of companies who are pretending to like us and then turning around and supporting the politicians who will put more money in their pockets and discriminate against queer people.
And they would say that it wasn't, you know, a personal choice, probably. They would say that they aren't supporting those people because they're homophobic. They're supporting them because they're good for business and they happen to be homophobic. But you can't actually...
No, you can't support a homophobic politician. You can't give money to a homophobic politician who's literally legislating against us having jobs and lives and marriages and families and homes and children.
Mm-hmm.
And say it's good for business.
Yeah.
Like, on the other side of that hypocrisy, one of the top sponsors of San Francisco's Pride, Gilead Pharmaceuticals, is the company that makes PrEP and PEP.
And PrEP and PEP, for people who don't know, are pharmaceutical drugs that either lower your chance of contracting HIV or your chance of transmitting it if you do have it already.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Hi, Shan here, just popping in to say that it is both PrEP and PEP that reduce your risk of contracting HIV. Neither reduce your risk of passing on the infection if you are HIV positive. Don't want to spread misinformation. Sorry about that. Those are, like, potentially life-saving
drugs. Those are huge and important. And I actually hadn't heard about them until relatively recently.
Because, really? Yeah, that's wild, because they've been around for a while.
Well, I'm from a conservative background.
Yeah, fair.
Don't really get out much.
So this would be, like, PrEP and PEP are great if you can get them to the people who are most likely to contract or pass on HIV AIDS.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, what's that?
Was it around, like, when I would have been going through, like, sex ed and stuff in school?
Yeah, that's been around since 2004.
Cool. Probably should have learned about it.
Probably.
Yeah. All right. But you were talking.
I also didn't learn about it until like a couple years ago, I think.
Yeah,
I
that's
don't know.
What I meant
this
when I
wild.
Like heard about it relatively recently.
Yeah. No, that is super recent because it's been around for almost 16 years.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I just learned about abstinence. I didn't learn that
Well, no, I was given a cup of clear liquid and told to pour some into someone else's cup and have some of theirs poured into mine. And then, like, at the end of the class, we all had, quote unquote, an STD because all of our cups had turned pink because one person had the chemical that reacted. It was so fucking stupid. Like, I'm not a cup.
There was there was a skit where one person had a construction paper heart. And she walked across the room arm in arm with one boy, tore off part of the heart, gave it to someone, walked around the room with another boy, tore off some of the heart, gave it to someone,
as if, with another as one. If to say that you have a finite amount of like love and sexuality in your life, and if you give someone that, you're giving it away and you'll never get it back because then, you're a fucking commodity.
At the end, she walked around with one boy and he was like, "Hey, could I have some of your heart?" And she was like, "I got nothing left to give." Makes you think.
Awful, terrible thing to teach anyone. Let's talk about Gilead Pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, so at least they've created this amazing life-changing drug, and yes, that's what has it made HIV and AIDS go down so much in recent years.
Except HIV transmission rates haven't gone down.
What? Why?
Well, LGBTQ people statistically are less likely to have health insurance, and Black and Latinx LGBTQ folk are at the highest risk of contracting HIV. They are also disproportionately the ones earning less money.
Right.
This drug that costs $6 to manufacture a 30-day supply of is priced at $1,500 to $2,000 a month.
Oof. I knew you were going to say a big number, but that number was bigger than I anticipated.
It's often not covered by insurance.
Which is wild, because you feel like it would be.
It's totally prohibitive to folk living anywhere near the poverty line.
Yeah.
It's wildly hypocritical of them to sponsor a Pride event, give money to this, like, basically at this point, Pride is a corporation in itself, which is another level of frustration. Like, we went to Pride this year, and I saw, like, rainbow dumpsters and a whole bunch of stuff to buy and
rainbow for sale sign.
Just like a lot of rainbow stuff that we could buy and a lot of like things we could buy and a lot of people we could give our money to and more things we could buy and really nothing about us.
Yeah, I went to the parade and it was just like some actual like wonderful organizations were marching in it, and you learned more about different resources, like an organization for single gay parents or something like that, but then
which is great.
Most of it was like Amazon would walk and they would have like people take up like three blocks of the parade.
Pride started as a riot. It's not about them. It's not about being supportive of gay people. It's about gay people celebrating the ability to stand outside and feel safe and feel free. I don't know what else to say about it other than I'm sad. Like, I like that you think you have to slap a rainbow on things to stay relevant, but I
wouldn't want them. Like, if we have to live in a capitalistic culture, I would want, I don't know.
I want Target to sell rainbow shirts. And I want them to sell me rainbow pins, but I also want them to be supporting the politicians who are making it possible for, like, Black trans women to live their fucking lives and not be afraid every time they walk down a street and not have to, like, feel like they need to defend themselves all the time. I want them to be, putting pictures of Two-Spirit Native Americans up and celebrating them and showing the world them. And my problem with rainbow capitalism is that it's centered on white men.
And
as long as rich white men are fine, everyone else is fine too. And as long as AT&T has a rainbow logo 1 month out of the year, then we don't need to do anything else for gay rights because it's accepted and everyone's fine. But it's not, because we don't have legal protections and we don't have the ability to live our lives safely everywhere.
And the cheap shit that they're selling us probably made in very, very horrible conditions.
Oh,
in
yeah.
Other
no,
countries.
I have. You want to talk about slave labor?
Let's do it.
there are companies that support Pride that directly profit from slave labor and child labor. And there's no way that in 2019 you can argue that you're donating to an anti-gay politician because it's good for business. You can't do that. You can't say that because it doesn't matter what else they're doing. Like, they're trying to legislate against people. against human people who exist and are real, and you want, you're voting for them so that they legislate about your imaginary future money. Fuck you. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit about your money.
For real.
I don't give a shit about your quarterly profit margin, and I don't give a shit about your company.
It's not cool to look like a sociopath in the eyes of consumers anymore. And so they have to have talking points where it makes it look like mm-hmm. they care about other human beings.
But because
the buying power is where we live right now.
They're just following what's popular. They're just trying to stay relevant. I feel like I've just sat here being angry at capitalism for the last half hour.
I feel like sometimes we need that. Hey, you know what's going on?
Anyway, the election is next week.
I was just about to say. Do you know what's happening next week?
The election is next week. And you should vote if you can.
The Canadian election was last week?
Yeah. It's a stupid system and I hate things? It.
I don't know.
Nothing changed. Nothing ever fucking changes. I'm worried that I just sound like sad and like a downer, and I really don't like doing that on this podcast because I like things to be like positive and happy, but also like the world is going to shit and my anxiety is killing me, and sometimes I need to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think there's a way to really talk about rainbow capitalism without sounding a little bit like a downer.
I mean, it is a downer. The it whole thing's a downer. Is.
Yeah, the system is rigged and it's bad, and there's nothing we can do to fix it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the election's next week, so let's go vote. For real,
hopefully
though.
Hopefully we'll vote, like, good people in.
For real, though. You know, go vote. For real. Hey, you? You listening?
Also, Congress needs term limits. What the fuck?
Like, I still love the use of rainbows as a symbolism. Like, in Seattle, then some neighborhoods, the crosswalks are painted rainbow, and I know it's, like, an empty gesture, and it's for pride and stuff, but I still get so happy whenever I see them, and whenever I see a tourist taking a picture with one excitedly.
Yeah, it makes me happy, too, honestly. Like, I know when I'm being pandered to.
But sometimes I like sometimes to be pandered to.
I like being pandered to. Please give me a rainbow sweatshirt so that I can feel gay and happy.
Yeah,
like
my favorite shoes.
Okay, but
are...
there's also stuff like the good parts of rainbow capitalism, which is companies that are specifically for queer people, like Tomboy X, where I just bought like a swimsuit and a really comfy hoodie, and yes, they are rainbow. Mm-hmm. But I gave my money to a company that uses trans models and queer models and fat models and black models and Latinx models, and like they're actually supporting queer people directly, and I know that their money isn't going to shitty politicians. God, I hope that's true.
I hope so. The only thing, are you googling it right now?
I'm googling it right now.
It was a lot.
No. Okay. So sorry.
Yeah.
The CEO of Tomboy X, her name is Fran Dunaway, and she started the project as like a passion project in collaboration with her wife, Naomi Gonzalez, to create the perfect button-up shirt, and then they pivoted to focus on underwear, and I'm delighted. That makes me very happy. Yeah, Tomboy X is good, and their bras and undies are comfy as heck.
And if anyone from Tomboy X is listening, we and will sell out for
we
you.
We will say whatever you want us to say. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like there are good parts where I can get undies that don't make me feel dysphoric, and I can get sweaters that I feel actually do celebrate me because my money is going to queer people and they are supportive of other queer people.
The only really thing that I've contributed for rainbow capitalism lately is this past year I purchased some of the Converse Pride collection. Now I have very sparkly rainbow Converse sneakers, and I love them a lot. And I like them because whenever there's a gay person in the area, they will find me and say, hey, I like your shoes. It's pretty great.
I have rainbow glasses that I got from an online glasses company, and I bought them during Pride Month because during that month they were donating to the Trevor Project, which is cool, but I also feel like you could do that all the time. Mm-hmm. You could donate all the time. Yeah, I just feel like if you're going to pander to the queer community, you need to do it with your dollars and your politics and not just the products that you sell.
I'm looking at the Pride page for Converse, and right now it isn't June, so I can't really tell if they were giving any money to any causes, and I don't see that they were. But all of the models are queer, and there's a variety of ages and gender identities and stuff, which is nice.
Nice.
But they aren't saying anything about, like, donating some of the proceeds to the Trevor Project. I love when it's the Trevor Project. That would be nice. Put your money where your mouth is. Instead of just putting your mouth where your money is.
Mouth where our money is. Yeah. Gobbling it up. That's like a capitalist pig.
Oink, oink. Oink.
I don't know if I have any words left about this phenomenon, because I don't want to get angry again.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not fun to listen to when I'm angry.
I think people listen to you and they go like, hell yeah.
All right, that's fine, I guess. Maybe I'm very anxious.
Listeners, if you're still listening to this and you thought hell yeah at least once, please tweet at us or at Shan. Hell yeah. So we didn't solve rainbow capitalism.
We didn't, and I don't think that we will, but we are learning about the history of our culture,
mm-hmm.
and maybe opening people's eyes a little bit to be a little more
critical of what you see and what you consume.
Yeah, critical, I think, is what I meant more. Like, think about where your dollars are actually going. I will say I am privileged in that I can, like, afford to buy my underwear and bras from Tomboy X. And if you can't afford to buy from there and you, like, have to buy from Walmart, that's fine. Like, you have to wear clothes. And it's very, very hard to be an ethical consumer
mm-hmm.
when so many companies are owned by the same people and the same people are profiting.
Ethical consumerism is a privilege that is only afforded to wealthy people.
Yes. It's very hard to spend your money ethically.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Because it's hard to tell where your money's going, because companies are owned by umbrella corporations that are owned by conglomerations that are owned by, like...
Some would say that there's no ethical consumption over late capitalism.
Some would say that there's no ethical consumption under late capitalism. Yes, I say that constantly. It's true. If you can give your money to good people, do it. If you can't afford to give your money to people, still wear clothes.
And don't eat at Chick-fil-A.
Don't eat at Chick-fil-A, though. Come on. Let's end this, because I need to edit it and put it on the internet for people to listen to. You can support us by rating, reviewing, subscribing, being a cool friend, telling a friend about us, tweet about us.
Telling us about us.
Tell us about us, and we'll tweet at you.
If you leave us a 5-star review, we will read it out loud to you on air and also grin at each other real big as if to say, like, oh my gosh, we got one. KLam87 said, educational, funny, and quirky. What more could you ask for, really? Thanks, KLam87. You're my best friend, and I love you. And
if we ever meet, happy?
I'll kiss you right on the forehead. Mwah.
With permission.
If you want, yes.
That made me happy. Thank you for the people who do support us on Patreon. If you'd like to join us at Patreon for $7 a month, patreon.com/vintagelespod for even more Vintage Lesbians content. You can also follow Vintage Lesbians on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, which is all at Vintage Lespod. You can also send us an email if you want to at vintagelespod@gmail.com. Follow our personal pages. I'm at justashan_.
And I'm at Allison Humphreys. You figure out how to spell it.
And thank you, as always, to Leslie for designing our beautiful logo.
Leslie.
What a treasure.
I've been having trouble remembering to take a picture of my mail to prove to my insurance company that I moved in March.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday at midnight, Leslie texted me and said, hey, are you at home right now? And I said, this is terrifying. Are you about to knock on my door? And she said, no, take a picture of her mail. And it was nice.
Oh, that's cute.
You probably don't need to include... Oh, you can. Yeah, I trust you. If it's not charming, snip, snip, baby.
I know how to do things.
Snip, snip.
Thank you for listening to Vintage Les Pod.
Thank you.
We love you.
We love you. Bye.
Bye-bye.